Welcome to a new episode of Liftoff, a Jets football podcast with your hosts, Chris, and from playlikeajet.com, Mr. Sharman Phillip. And remember, you can follow us on Twitter, /X, at Liftoff Jets. You can follow Sharman at GrownFolk1980. You can follow myself at CP7NY. You could find our podcast wherever you find your podcasts, at Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, iHeartRadio. And remember, you can follow us also at SportsWireRadio.org. And you can follow the station manager there, Thomas Bryce, at ThomasBryce2017, for all the other schedules for the other all the other great shows on the station. So, Sharman, we got another special guest this week.
Yeah, man. I mean, every year we get to speak to this guy, and you know, I think we love every one of the guests that come through. But we have a couple guys that always come through for us every year, and James is one of us. Basically, he is one of us because he brings in a pretty intricate view of what, you know, how the Jet stuff goes on every year. Kind of calms us down, get to the issues. So, welcome, James. James Weekhouse.
Welcome. Thanks, sir. Thanks for having me, guys. Good to be back. I know. I think the last time we talked was like right after the Jets opening day win against the Buffalo Bills.
Right. So.
Yes, we've been. It's been a long time since then, but yeah, no, I always enjoy coming on and talking to you guys. So thanks.
Yeah, I mean, we recently we've been having deep conversations about everything that happened. I mean, the unfortunate four snap injury for Aaron Rodgers that derailed every plan that the Jets had in 2023. We've beaten that with a dead horse. We've also beaten the lack of depth at quarterback. We've also beaten the lack of depth at offensive line. Yeah. And the you know, we as Jets fans, we're keenly aware of the fact that offense is our issue going forward. Mm-hmm. We do have other things that are issues, but I just wanted to speak about looking forward, you know. What are some of the answers that the Jets what are some of the things they could look at going forward that would give them a better chance at what we would call kind of a win or lose, I think at this point this season that's it for them for this regime. No, I think at the end of the day, if they don't get anything done this season, that's it, and most likely everybody will probably have to start from a scratch. I mean, the Jets would have to start from scratch. So from your point of view, where would you like to start talking about some of the answers for some of the major issues the Jets have?
Yeah, so I'll start. Quick thought on the coaching staff there. Yeah, I think they are super fortunate that they're even back for this upcoming year. There's kind of an odd trend the last 2 years that I kind of picked up on in terms of what happens at the back half of the year. You know, we've had moments in both the last two seasons where we're somewhat riding high, you know, where we beat Buffalo in 2022 into the bye, and you know, you're 6-2 going into the bye, and things are looking up, and then all of a sudden you come out of the bye and you go 1-7, and you can't score a touchdown. They in 2022, their last touchdown scored was in week 15. So whatever happened after the bye, it just was a second half collapse. And yes, we haven't had a quarterback in a very long time, and that's been true for the last 2 years as well. But then it pretty much happened again this year, where they were limited offensively, but you found a way to crawl your way to 3-3 without Rodgers going into that bye. You just beat the Philadelphia Eagles. It was a tough schedule. You had to beat the Bills. You had to play in Dallas. You had to play against Kansas City in primetime. You had to go to Denver. You had to play Philly. And without a quarterback, you found your way to 3-3. And all of a sudden you come out of the bye and you have 5 losses by double digits, and it just completely fell apart. So ultimately, kind of where I'm going to take this is at the end, and I mentioned to you guys before, I always kind of look at the end of the year, what are some of the numbers that really, really tell the story, right? We know the personnel might not have been there and the coaching was what it was. But the first thing you have to do is you have to identify some of the big problems and then what's the answer for it. So the numbers that I kind of compiled there are, and let me back up very, very quickly, because I mentioned this to you and I think it's important also, is not every moment in a football game is created equally, because you're not going to be perfect 100% of the time. But there are moments where it's time to focus up, be disciplined, and execute the play. And if you can make them make those plays on the in the important moments, you give yourself a better chance to win, or at least stay in the game, which they haven't really been able to do. And so we know the numbers in terms of points per game. It was terrible, 15.8, right? But you look at third down. Like, let's just go to third down. You weren't just bad. It was historically bad. They had 235 third down attempts this year. So that, for one, you're getting to third down a lot. And again, that's not a bad thing, but not all third downs are created equal as well. They weren't good on early downs, which led to third and longs, which also does not help your conversion rate. But altogether, third down, you have the eighth most attempts in the NFL on third down. Despite that number, you only converted 61 of those, which was the least amount of conversions in the NFL for any team in terms of conversion. So you're 25.9% on third down. And so all of a sudden, what you want to do there is you want to look at, well, who is in that range that has had success, right? Who's had success in those numbers? And the Cowboys were at 230 attempts, so five less than us. They converted 111 times. So you kind of look at it, you got to convert on third down or get yourself in those third down manageable situations. And you could say, you know, James, you're crazy. The Cowboys have Dak Prescott. They got CeeDee Lamb. They got Brandon Cooks, Tony Pollard, Jake Ferguson, all those guys. We're watching a football game right now with the Pittsburgh Steelers that, you know, don't have the most dynamic offense in the NFL. They just about matched the Jets on third down in terms of attempts at 232, yet they converted 85 times. So you're looking at a historically bad third down offensive team. And to me, what that signals is, one, you have to be better on first and second down. And the Jets were pretty famous this year for the second and 10 run it to try to get into some third down manageable yardage, but they couldn't really run the ball very well. So you ultimately wind up in third and long anyway. So early downs, what can you do on early downs? I think for the Jets last year, what they could have looked to do more, maybe some more play action on first down. You had a quarterback in Zach Wilson who he struggled a whole lot, but he was actually quite better on using play action than he was without the play action. So they could have incorporated a little bit more play action. And the Jets were not high in percentage of motion used in their pre-snap. They were towards the end, and not to say that's some kind of indicator of success really. But I do think for a team that struggles at the quarterback position, it could help identify some coverages. What's the defense kind of going to give you? And how can you exploit that as an offense? So really, early downs is the key for me on the third down. And then really, once you get to third down, if you're in those manageable situations, I think that conversion rate kind of goes up.
Hey, James, one second. I'm not to cut you off, but
no, cut me off anytime.
Those are brilliant points. And one of the reasons why I say I think that way is because the Jets or Hackett's propensity to call a lot of plays or repeat a lot of concepts would behoove him to motion a lot to get to these concepts, because you could run a multitude of concepts, the same concept over and over again, but the way you get to the concept is where you get the defense.
Right.
You know, you could call a smash concept a million times, but you could run smash a million different ways. And a lot of it on getting the defense to think you're going to do something one way and do it another is one of the reasons why motion confuses a lot of defense. Yes, primarily yep. motion will sell a lot of what the defense is doing. But if you were having issues, like the Jets were having issues with a quarterback that can't see the field properly, maybe that's what you're trying, and you're trying to clarify things, yeah. or you're trying to be less predictable, I would say you're right. The fact that they weren't motioning is a massive issue. Another reason why this stands out is flexibility has been an issue for the Jets for a while. Mm-hmm. That's another reason why I agree with you when you say that they're lucky that they're still here. Why are in an NFL where the defenses are constantly doing so much to basically dictate to you as an offense what you should or shouldn't be doing, why aren't you being flexible enough to change the things that you do? I don't understand this need to be the same guy every Sunday. This is ridiculous. And because of that, people basically call out a lot of the run concepts and a lot of the pass concepts and know where the ball is going before. And part of the reason why guys are not getting open. Yes, they didn't have a lot of guys that could. But again, if you don't have a lot of guys that could, you could add that kind of a little bit of a spark by doing these small things to get better. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the biggest term that you used was predictable, right? Mm. It felt like, and you guys probably felt the same, you know, I was sitting on my couch and I felt like I knew what was coming. And if I know what's coming sitting on my couch, then chances are the defensive coordinator that just spent the last week preparing for this game, he most likely knows what's coming, and the defenders as well. Because when you're looking at it from a defensive perspective, if you know you're facing an offense that isn't extremely diverse and you know, and isn't giving you all that kind of eye candy, it's you're thinking less, and when you're thinking less, you're usually faster to the football, and that's what it felt like a lot. It always felt like there's 11 guys around the football when the Jets are when you know someone's playing defense against the Jets. There's 11 guys almost feel like immediately at all points, and they know what's coming. They knew what was coming. They were faster to the football because of it. There wasn't a whole lot of complexities that made them think. And I do think that's a factor there. And with the motion too, and Sharma, you brought it up, is that whole idea they talk about with the 49ers all the time. And, you know, Shanahan is, you know, everything looks the same until the last second. And then that's what gets you, right? And obviously Shanahan's a brilliant mind. I don't know if we're going to find anyone like him to just show up for next year or the year after, or whatever the case is. But yeah, the motion, I think, is a big factor. It may not always predicate automatic success, but I do think, yeah, when you have a quarterback that's struggling, he doesn't see the field very well, or has periods of the game where he's not seeing the field very well, it helps. And for the Jets, they do have two very dynamic playmakers in Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson. And I think there's a ton of ways that you can use them. That maybe goes into the other point of the personnel usage. It wasn't the best look of all time from Nathaniel Hackett, that he kind of admitted to us at some point that he really didn't know Breece Hall was that good of a pass catcher, which, you know,
that was one of the dumbest things I ever heard in my life.
Yeah. And it was kind of like, all right, well, you know, and again, he didn't catch the ball a whole lot at Iowa State, I don't think. But he did do it quite a bit, and they did target him quite a bit last year before he tore his ACL. It didn't look like what it looked like this year in that regard, but you have to know, okay, this guy is clearly a dynamic runner. Every time he touches the football, there's a potential that he can go 60, 70, 50, whatever the case is. He could score a touchdown any given play. Just get him the ball. Find ways to get him the ball. Be creative. Do what you need to do, especially when you lose your, you know, first ballot Hall of Fame quarterback four plays in. That should have been something, you know. So I think personnel-wise, maybe it's part usage and part You know, nothing against Dalvin Cook. That didn't obviously work out. But I felt like we knew a lot sooner than maybe Nathaniel Hackett and Robert Saleh did that that wasn't working out. Yet in critical moments of football games on third downs, whatever the case was, you know, we're watching Breece Hall coming off the field and Dalvin Cook run on it. And it just did not feel like anything good was about to happen. He wasn't a good pass protector either. And that felt like it showed up quite a few reps where as a coaching staff, you would look at that one and then the next one and be like, all right, this isn't working out. We have to change up a little bit. And obviously that didn't happen until much later. Actually, the one that got the axe was Michael Carter. So
well, James, let me ask you something.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, you guys, by the way, you guys stop me whenever because I could ramble on forever.
Yeah, no, so that's okay. We're the same way too. don't you think let's hope that with the quarterback, with Aaron Rodgers starting next season, all of this should be different? I mean, the play calling, you know, the reading the defense, we shouldn't be sitting back in our chair and saying, oh, we know what's coming now, you know, with Aaron Rodgers, hopefully, you know, and with other pieces that we're going to get, hopefully this offseason.
Yeah, I think it's going to look a lot different because once Aaron gets to the line of scrimmage, he's seen everything that you could potentially see. He's seen probably more than most, if not, you know, the same as, you know, the Tom Brady's and the Peyton Manning's of the world. And so he's seen everything and he knows what he wants to be in when he's given certain looks. And what's going to really, really come down to it for the Jets is whoever we get to add to this offense and obviously the current guys is everyone winds up on the same page. Because Aaron Rodgers is going to X a lot. There's going to be a lot of signals, a lot of calls, and everyone's got to be on the same page. I think execution wise, this past season, we didn't see a whole lot of that. But you obviously trust guys like Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, and then you got to supplement whether, you know, you bring in a Davante Adams, whatever the case is, that'll be an easy transition. But yes, it should look different. I think probably really the biggest issue, at least for me anyway, was I know you lost a first ballot Hall of Famer, and that's gonna cripple most of everybody. But I just didn't think it had to cripple you like this. And so that's the piece there. And the only worry then outside of that for next year is, if he goes down, who's it going to be that's going to step up? Is, you know, based on what quarterback we get, fine. But are the players at that point going to be in the best position to succeed based on a coaching staff that felt like offensively they could not get guys in the right spots at the right time doing the right thing in critical moments of the game, but really for the most part, I guess for 2023, you can call it most of all the offensive snaps. And so, it should look a whole lot different. And that's what we hope. And again, the third down is big for me. The third down is huge. And I think that the secondary huge piece of that is the red zone, right? So you look at it, okay.
Yeah.
Can you convert on third down? And hey, once you get into that red zone, are you scoring touchdowns? Are you putting sevens on the board? Are you putting threes on the board? Are you not putting anything up on the board? And for the Jets, they sat at 30th in red zone attempts per game. And it sounds like a shocking number because I tried to look back once I actually saw the number. It was 2.2. I think the Giants were worse than us. The Giants were worse than us and someone else was worse than us, but the Giants were worse. I could deal with that. That's okay. But 2.2 red zone attempts per game, which is you're not moving the ball down the field. You're obviously not gaining any yards or gaining any momentum. And then at that number, at the 2.2, they were last in red zone touchdowns per game. It was less than one. It was 0.7 red zone touchdowns per game. So, third down, the red zone, Rodgers should make both of those things better. But when you look at the issues in order to figure out your answers, And I think it, going back to actually, you know, going back to the motion part, the motion, I think, is almost even more important in the red zone, because you look at all these teams that, you know, once they get inside, you know, maybe that 10 yard line, that 5 yard line, you know, they're really using motion to ultimately get someone the football in the flat. They got some leverage on a defender and who can get to the pylon first. And I think the Jets, you know, they can use Garrett Wilson in that regard too. And try to figure out ways to get him the football a whole heck of a lot more. But in terms of, yeah, your offensive struggles, third down, historically bad, red zone, the worst in the NFL, if not within the last, couple teams. And the third piece is the penalties. And that's not strictly just an offensive thing. I think it was big on offense as well. Defense had their fair share as well, but they were charged with the most penalties in the NFL. I'm sure there's a few there that you could debate, but it also wasn't close. It wasn't close. They committed 9 more penalties than every other team. They're the only team in the NFL that averaged over 7 penalties a game. And going back to, you know, the focus, the discipline, the being on the same page, it seemed like a lot of those penalties on the offense, kind of focusing on the offense, was pre-snap type stuff. Mm. It's your false starts. It's your delays of game. It's your illegal motion. It's your illegal man downfield on screens, all that type of stuff, all that stuff for your delays of game, which are pretty popular. We had a couple this year where I think they even took us out of field goal range, when you have those 5 yard penalties, but you know, that goes to your preparation, your discipline, your focus. I think a lot of that goes to the coaching staff, but when you talk about historically bad on third down, historically bad in the red zone, and the most penalties in the NFL, those are your three issues. And really where I think you need to fix at least the first two is your complexities in the offense, getting your players in the right position at the right time, your playmakers, feed off of them in those important moments. You know, if it's third and short and the defense, they want a key on Garrett Wilson, get Garrett Wilson in the best position to succeed at that point, and feed him. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You come back the next go around. But I just felt like there was a lot of situations where the Jets could have been way more creative, less predictable, and really got the ball in the hand of their best players. Instead of keeping some of them on the sideline for other personnel type of decisions.
You know what's the craziest thing about everything you're saying, and is the saddest thing about all the conversations that we've had since the season ended? It's alarming how much of these issues that we're pointing out, in my opinion, lends itself directly to teaching and coaching. If there is a ton of procedural issues and on offense, that's a teaching issue.
Yeah.
I don't understand. And the bad thing about this is it's basically continual. It's been the same way. Last year they didn't have the most penalized team, but they were highly penalized.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that the coach that's supposed to be a quote unquote player coach cannot get his guys to calm the hell down and focus enough to understand when the ball is going to be snapped or taught enough on screen plays? I mean, I kind of saw a little bit of that being an issue throughout the league with the illegal man downfield thing, but it was kind of crazy how it happened way too often. If this is something that's popping up constantly week after week, I would say, from my understanding of the legendary offensive coaches in the NFL that I know of, the way they do things and the stories I've heard of players, if you were doing something that was damaging the team at some point, the coach would basically drill that thing until you got it right. You could not do anything else until we figured out because we're not calling that play again. If you can't execute that play, we're not calling it. Take it out. Take it out of the playbook. You know, and that's the startling thing about this, because Aaron Rodgers does not fix all of this. That's the scary thing about this. He will, of course, yeah, you know, change the way defenses deal with us. They might not be as aggressive as they've been because they don't fear the quarterbacks that we've had. That might be true. But overall, player discipline, player procedural issues with offensive lineup situations, guys lining up wrong, guys, like you said, the false start issues and all that stuff. To me, that's coaching.
Mm-hmm.
That's coaching. A lot of that falls on coaching. I know that the players have a ton of responsibility, and I don't want to take it away from them. I understand that some guys, you know, I mean, I don't want to like beat up on Mekhi Becton, but he had a season where I just could not put my finger on what at any given point he was having issues, and it was not just one set of things. It was like it kept going in and out, you know, and I was like, Brown is not like at some point, man, just pull the kid. He's struggling out there. Something's up, you know. And they wouldn't, you know, and again, it goes back to the coaching, and it's just scary to me as a Jets fan thinking about the, you know, what are the things that we could lean on that were positive, which is very little, and what are the things that we're sure that this coaching staff is going to basically beat on to change over the offseason, which again, like we said, unfortunately, they're not that flexible. They believe in the things they do to almost to a fault.
Yeah.
You know, and that's bad. That, to me, watching football being played over the last season, even over the weekend, flexibility is what football is about. Overall, you have to understand that teams are paying a lot of attention to what you do constantly. Mm-hmm. We, as fans, pay attention to what you do constantly to the point where, like you said, James, we kind of sit on our couches and go, wait, this is going to be a wide zone run. Boom, it happens. This is going to be inside zone, which, again, it happens too often that we, as laymen, see these things coming. Imagine yeah. The guys that actually study it, you know, but With all this being said, what do you think is the should be the catalyst for change? Is it as simple as just changing coaches? Or if they're not going to change coaches, what you think is a positive way to look at, you know, how they will approach the offseason coming up, especially on the pointers, the things you pointed out, the way that they could do that to kind of change the dynamic a little bit and point this offense in the right direction.
Yeah. So I think in terms of, I mean, yeah, they're not going to change. Unfortunately, they're not going to change coaches. I probably would have, but given that they're not going to, this is with everything you talked about, we'll put the penalties on the coaches. Cause I agree with that assessment as well. Adjustments also, and I'll make a point on that later, because last night or yesterday, or when did the Dolphins play? A couple nights ago, maybe Saturday night.
Yes,
I was kind of thinking about what the Chiefs were doing against the Dolphins, and maybe what the Jets didn't do in their games against the Dolphins, because, like you said, they are sometimes, you know, too stubborn to change, and it's, you know, it's at their own fault. But the Jets, the coaching staff, they have to get together their meeting rooms, and they have to scratch everything that they did last year. And not to say scratch in terms of start over with something new, but they have to sit in a room and they have to say, okay, this is what we did last year during camp. this is what we did last year during practices. This is how we split up positional drills. This is how we split up the film room. Here's what we did in the film room. How do we change our practice habits, the teaching of the discipline? How do we change the install of everything, right? Because the install, you're usually working, you're working individuals, you're working position groups, and then you go from position groups, then you go into the teams, right? So everything kind of all comes in together. They, you know, the position groups get together, offensive lines installing the protections on certain plays, the blocking schemes on certain plays, you know, the running backs are figuring out, okay, when I get the handoff, if it's a zone or if it's a power, if it's trap, how's my footwork? You know, the quarterback's working on his handoff, his delivery, wide receiver blocking, et cetera. And then obviously that goes all the way through pass game type stuff, schemes, everything. How are we installing? And that's the same for the defensive side. Hey, if we're in a blitz, how does this work? And then you wind up ultimately in teams where the whole thing comes together. And something isn't necessarily gelling when it's coming to that, because guys either aren't on the same page, they're not prepared, they don't know assignments, whatever the case might be. So I think what the answer for the coaching staff is, they have to look back and say, what were our habits and how do we change those things? How do we maybe spend more time positional wise? How do we change what we look at in the film room? You know, questions we answer, how we present it, things in the playbook itself, maybe it's different explanations, however it's supposed to be. I think it's that deeply rooted where they really have to look back and they have to say, okay, what are we going to do differently as a staff to wind up when this team comes in for spring and then wind up in the summer, they're at a different space in terms of their knowledge of what we want to do. I think Aaron Rodgers is probably going to be a big part of that, obviously. But I think that's where they need to go to ultimately fix discipline and execution. That's my main thought. I always think back, and I thought back, I listened to something with Dabo Sweeney pretty recently. I think it was a podcast. And not to say Clemson's the best offensive team in the world, but Dabo said that every single year at the start of the season, they meet as a staff and they wind up reinstalling the entire program from scratch. Hmm. They reinstall the entire thing from practice, certain habits, you know, how they're going to teach things, drills that they can do better. Certain mantras and sayings, how they're going to present everything to the players. And I thought that was kind of cool. So that's where I'd go coaching staff wise, but, adjustments. I want to kind of touch on that point a little bit, because I'm not, listen, Sauce is the best cornerback in the NFL. I don't really think it's close. I think it's really hard in today's NFL to follow a wide receiver 100% of the time and ask someone to do that every single week. Yes. And I do think that's not what the Jets defense is predicated on. But I think there are certain situations where you say, okay, we're playing a divisional game against the Miami Dolphins. They don't have Tyreek Hill. How do we make sure someone other than Jalen Waddle beats us? If we're going to get beat, it better not be by Jalen Waddle, because he's the only other one. I mean, obviously you have Raheem Mostert, but really just kind of talking passing game. How do you make that happen? They didn't make that happen. But if you really even go back to the first time they played the Dolphins, the Jets love playing man coverage on third down. I think that's, yes. we know that if it's third down, they're going man coverage. Sometimes again, at a fault, because it could be like third and long, and you're like, hey, I don't know if we need to be playing man coverage here. One guy slips, one guy falls. This whole thing is going to the wayside. But early on in the game, I think it was maybe the first or the second drive for the Dolphins. I want to say it was the first drive. There was like a 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, and they had Jalen Waddle in the slot. And we're playing man coverage. And again, nothing against a guy like Sauce. He's great. Michael Carter II is great. And I think he was probably the – he might have been the slot corner.
Was Carter there at that game? I'm trying to
he
remember.
Made, if he wasn't, if he wasn't there, then my point this is even worse than what I was gonna, what I, you know, because if he's not there, but you have
I think
Jaylen
he had
Waddle.
gotten injured, if I remember. I think he had gotten injured sometime earlier in that game. I think the backup slot was there.
Okay, and so Jaylen Waddle is in the slot. He's on the left hand side, and he's really just running a vertical. The outside receiver just ran a hitch to keep the outside corner up. This way, he doesn't interfere with anything, and then you just wind up with a 1-on-1 situation: Jaylen Waddle versus the slot corner. Who's the first to get to the sideline? And it's most of the times it's going to be Jaylen Waddle. And you're kind of sitting there, you're like, all right, if we're going to stop this offense, you're going to need Tua to start to think a little bit here. And even that half a second where you might show man, and then all of a sudden you got some safeties rotating, you're all of a sudden playing zone, and he has to think for a half a second. That half a second is the difference between Quinnen Williams sitting in his lap, Jermaine Johnson potentially coming off the edge, Bryce Huff coming off the edge. And what you saw on Saturday night with the Chiefs and the Dolphins, I know it was like negative 30 or whatever the case was, and Tua just looked really uncomfortable. But Steve Spagnuolo was rotating safeties. He was giving them zone looks. He was giving them man looks. And Tua, you could tell he was just hesitant to throw the ball. And that speed that they have, it just looked like they were a way different team. And when they don't have to think, they're the fastest team on grass, on turf, whatever you want to call them. And Saturday night, that didn't look that way. And I do think that had a lot to do with Steve Spagnuolo saying, okay, this is what we need to do this game in this moment to defeat this team in this offense. And so for the Jets, I just thought there was a lot of moments, especially on defense, or I don't want to say especially on defense, or defense is easier to kind of pick out where you say, okay, a little bit stubborn. How about we give some kind of zone look, some kind of man look? Maybe we switch it up on early downs, get it on third down, and try to make the quarterback think a little bit, help those linemen get to the quarterback even more than they already do. So I think adjustments they got to make, and whether that's in game, that's week to week. But the answer, and I know it's kind of a broad one in terms of what they need to do, because I don't know what they do practice wise, but something needs to change in that regard. And usually that's your individuals, how you're spending in individuals, how you're spending in your position groupings, and how you're spending in your team groupings, and then how that mixes with your film sessions and what you're doing as a team and position groups in the film room.
The craziest thing about what you just said to me is I think I could draw even a better through line with paying attention to the Dallas Cowboys and Packers game. The Packers, who were known to run all these crossing routes, basically kept showing those crossing routes and basically kind of running these kind of comeback routes where it was like, who was it? Dobbs run a route where he basically came like it was a crossing route, stick his foot in the ground, and then basically reverse completely a 180. And guess what? He was wide open because the Cowboys are playing in some sort of zone or some kind of match zone, and the guy that passed Dobbs on is already onto somebody else. And Dobbs is going into, or looks like he's going into somebody else's zone. Guess what? He's not. So by the time he reverses, there's nobody there completely. He's so wide open, it's crazy. And they did that on that. They did that on the touchdown with the post, where it was a corner post concept, basically. The same thing. The preparation of understanding what a team would do and being able to be flexible enough to come off what you do every... Listen, we understand that for basically all your foundation, we know your foundation is man. We know that it's being aggressive that way. We understand that. But in the NFL, they pay the offense a lot of money to be able to beat you up on defense. You can't tell me that you can't for once in your life, watch a game. Talk about the Browns game where Njoku was going off. Come on, man.
Yep.
No zone. You're not going to come off this. You could see Mosley can't keep up with the guy, for heaven's sakes. Stop yeah. it. You know, and it was like they kept going back to that well over and over and over again, and the Jets refused to change the way they were doing things. But yeah, that I mean, the more you point out these, it's so accurate in my opinion, because it kind of came busting through the screen every weekend we watched the Jets play during the season, and this is the reason why we as Jets fans are so on edge about this upcoming season, because we understand that all what you're saying is awesome. You know, if they would be open enough to do these things, I mean, we would stand a great chance of changing things around. The problem is they haven't really shown a propensity to change.
Yeah.
They don't like to change. They there's almost like a hard-headedness
yeah.
to the way they do things.
Right. And you bring up a really good point with the Packers-Cowboys game. I mean, LaFleur put on a masterclass of, first yep. of all, I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, they won the toss and took the football.
Yes.
But you don't see a lot of whole teams want the ball at the second half. But you're looking at, all right, who's my opponent? The Cowboys. I give them the football first at home, and they get on a roll. We're down 7-0. And then all of a sudden, my first-time playoff quarterback, and he played great yesterday.
Wait, I think the Cowboys won the toss and gave the Packers first.
Oh, did they? Okay, I thought it yes. was the I thought the Packers might have took the football.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. The Packers took the ball first. Yes,
but you get the ball first. But again, like you know, if you go down in this game, you know, you're all of a sudden looking at Michael Parsons across the other way, and the defense. They're at home. The crowd's going, etc. They come out. They get the football. They go down the field. They score. But you know, the Bills kind of put together the little blueprint for the Cowboys. Run the football, right? And they got yep. Aaron Jones going right away. He's been hot the last few weeks. They kept going to that well, and it worked. And then as the game went on, you see, okay, yeah, again, that one route to Romeo Dobbs, I think, Stephon Gilmore got caught kind of peeking.
Oh, yeah.
And then he turned around Stephon Gilmore just kept on running. He had no idea where Romeo Dobbs was. But, you know, you're running the football that way, you know, you create a little bit of that misconception. And then that touchdown to the tight end that they had, it was a tight end leak. They ran the play action to the left. The tight end's on the left-hand side of the formation. And he's just really running like 2 yards across the line of line of scrimmage. Like he's basically going to block someone, but he's leaking out and he's coming on a vertical on the other side of the field. Jordan Love rolls out, and I mean, he couldn't have been more wide open. It was like there was four people on defense the way the touchdown came out. So, Matt LaFleur called it great, but that's the example of Matt LaFleur knows Dan Quinn from when they were in Atlanta, and he put it all out on the field. He gave his team the absolute best chance to put up points and counteract whatever Dak and the Cowboys were going to do to win that game.
That tight end leak play.
Yeah.
I saw that in the Houston game.
Yeah.
I saw that in that watching football in the NFL. It's such a copycat league. It's ridiculous. And mm-hmm. and this again, it go back again in watching the Jets football, and you do not see trends in Jets football. You watch offensive football around the league, and there's basically, it's almost like everybody's watching everybody play. And they put their little, you know, little sugar and you know, and spice or their own flavor to it, I guess, you know, whatever the calls are. But you could tell instantly this call looks exactly like what whoever called last weekend or a couple yeah. weeks ago. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of that going on. There's way too much. Oh man, what's the term? It's almost like they believe so much in what they do. It's yeah. not, you know, it's nobody, you know, they, hey man, we do what we do.
It was, you know, you kind of look back at All right, Zach probably played his best game, I don't know, maybe ever against the Kansas City Chiefs, right?
Yes.
And three, four plays or so, right, they stand out. It's, you know, that seam that he hit Tyler Conklin on was the back shoulder. It was perfect. Right. That all of a sudden, like that, as a, that one play, as you're an offensive coordinator and the quarterback that you've had struggled and he makes a play like that and he looked that comfortable, you kind of put that one in the bank and you say, okay, it's next week at practice, the week after that, whatever the case is, you have to understand why, you know, and I'm sure they talked about it and they went through the film room. I don't know. We just didn't see that play a whole lot after that game. And that was like week four, whatever. And then later on in that game, he hits Jeremy Ruckert down the sideline, back shoulder again.
Yep,
you know,
yep.
It looked good. They came out of the second half and you know what they do. It was a play action. They rolled Zach out. It was first down, early down. And then he threw across the field to, you know, downfield to Garrett Wilson. It was a nice gain, almost got them to midfield. You know, they didn't move the pocket a whole lot with him. You know, the play action, he was comfortable that way. But really, we didn't see a whole lot of that. I mean, we really did. The most we saw them throw downfield to Garrett Wilson, to me anyway, what it felt like, was this last game against the Patriots in the snow. Trevor Siemian kept giving him one-on-one chances down the sideline, and he did really well. He's Garrett Wilson. He always does, you know, his thing when he gets his chance. But you're like, hey, sometimes you're sitting there and I'm watching and I'm like, hey, listen, nothing's working out. Try to find a situation where you can get Garrett Wilson one-on-one. And if the look's not there, the look's not there. But if you know you have Garrett Wilson one-on-one, read the leverage of the cornerback and either get him downfield or get him on a back shoulder, because something has to get the offense going. And they really just couldn't find it this year. It was really frustrating to watch. I'm sure it's the same for you guys.
Oh yeah. To move on a little bit, how much of the draft have you looked at? How many players have you watched that are of need to the Jets? Yeah. And what's your thought on the 10th pick overall?
Yeah, so I'm a huge college football fan. And so I have my guys at the moment. A lot of things are going to change and guys are going to declare too. And so the 10th pick, I know it's usually when you're picking that high, it's got to be some kind of best player available. But I do think the Jets need to button down who their best players available are at your tackle position, your wide receiver position. And I'm going to throw Brock Bowers in that wide receiver type position, because I just think he's probably the only tight end that's going to be worth that level of a pick. But guys, some names I kind of have written down here, guys I like. I did it for 10th pick. Also, potentially if they want to trade down and they're in that mid range, grab another pick, maybe they can get their second round pick back or whatever the case is. Obviously Brock Bowers, tight end from Georgia. So if you're looking at a tight end, he's probably the only guy you're picking at the 10th pick. If you're looking at wide receiver wise, you really have probably two guys at the moment that would even be available at the 10th pick. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to go way before then. He's probably going to be a top five pick. Malik Nabers, wide receiver over at LSU. If he falls to a 10th pick, that's a nice landing spot there for the Jets.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that one.
Yep. And then Romo Dunes from Washington. I like him a lot, and I'll tell you why I like Odunze from Washington is he's a speedster. He's a downfield threat, but it's not the only thing that he can do. I think he's nuanced in his route running, which you look for these young guys, because they need to be able to come in. I think Jalen Hyatt's going to be good at some point. But I think the reason why he may not have had the success right away is the route tree is not all that advanced at the current moment. It really wasn't that advanced or need to be advanced at Tennessee. And so he's a downfield burner, but if he's not getting it downfield, there's not a whole lot else that he's going to do. And he's a third round pick. So there's different expectations, but with Odunze from Washington. He's a downfield threat, plus he's nuanced in his route running. He's a polished wide receiver, so he's really intriguing at 10 for me, because I do think what the Jets are missing, if they can pair Garrett Wilson with someone who could potentially take the top off of a defense, all of a sudden that changes how you're playing coverage as well. You know, so he's not as fast as and I don't think he's going to be as fast as a guy like Jameson Williams was. That was kind of the debate when Garrett Wilson was kind of coming out. But I do think the Jets would be pretty well served if they can get someone that has that downfield ability to change coverages, keep safety's eyes on that downfield. And, you know, even just a look to get Garrett open and clear up some field. I like him a lot. And then when you're looking at the offensive lineman, I think that's probably the biggest conversation that everyone's having right now.
Yes, sir.
You have Olu Fashanu from Penn State. If he falls there, potential at the 10 pick. I haven't looked at a whole lot of film from him, but he's like your January / February favorite for a top 10 pick. We'll see how that one plays out. Joe Alt from Notre Dame, he's up there. Talese Fayuga from Oregon State, he's a right tackle. So that's something to kind of consider as well. I think the Jets need a left tackle and a right tackle, so I wouldn't be picky in terms of passing on him because he doesn't play left, but he's a big mauler. Oregon State had one of the best offensive lines in all of college football. So if we're looking for offensive linemen, they're kind of a hotbed for right now. Amarius Mims is a left tackle he played right tackle at Georgia. I had him down lower if they were potentially to trade down. He's more of a project. He was injured a little bit this year. Really only had seven. I think he played seven games for Georgia this year. Didn't play a whole lot last year either. So he's a little bit of a projection. Obviously a really talented guy, but I don't know if that's where the Jets would want to go with the 10th pick at the moment. And of course, I have to throw out my guy, J.C. Latham. He played right tackle at Alabama. And Alabama had a little struggle on the offensive line, but they did have a lot of moving pieces. I don't think it's an indication. If you look at the offensive line numbers and the sacks that Alabama gave up, there's a lot of factors out there. So anyone kind of listening, saying Alabama's offensive line stunk this year, I don't want to take J.C. Latham. Just pull back on that. Jalen Milroe, a quarterback, was kind of figuring out progressions. Didn't always get the ball out pretty quick, and a lot of those came from a freshman left tackle who kind of really struggled early on in the year. The center wasn't very good at the shotgun snaps. That was Alabama's biggest issue, so a lot of timing was off. But J.C. Latham has a ton of experience. He played right tackle both in 2022 and this entire year, 2023. So those names are the big ones. And I think it's your wide receiver. Brock Bowers is probably your only tight end. And then I think you really have to look at the offensive tackle. This pick has to be on the offensive side of the football.
Latham a guy that you would take at 10 or no?
Sorry, say that again.
Is Latham a guy you would take at 10?
I would take Latham at 10. He would be underneath the right tackle from Oregon State, Talese Fayuga. If he's there at 10, that's a really intriguing pick if they want to go offensive lineman. But if he's gone, if he picks up steam and he's that top 9, top 8 type of guy, I would take a J.C. Latham there. I think the wide receiver from Washington, he's kind of a little bit of a shinier pick that you'd have to really, really consider in terms of where you'd want to go. But yes, at the moment, J.C. Latham, I would take him at 10 if he's there and the offensive lineman options ran dry. But
so there's four tackles you would take at 10: Latham, Fuaga, Bashuana, and Alt, right?
And Alt. Yep. Those are the big four, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, most likely, in my opinion, Alt goes top 3, top 4, in my view, because I've watched more than anything. He's the one I've watched the most. I would say Alt is the one I've watched the most. Latham is the one that I watched the third best behind Fuega. So for me, that's where I'm at. I'm at Alt, Fuega than Latham, because I haven't watched the other guys that much, so I haven't ranked them. So the way I think about it, I don't even think Alt is gonna make it past the fifth pick. And from what I see, I just think this kid is way too complete as a offensive lineman to anybody to let him go. I correct me if I'm wrong, Fuega is a better run blocker than he's a pass blocker. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I would agree that he's a mauler. He's a mauler for sure. Yeah. He's a big dude. I don't know the exact size off the top of my head. But I'm pretty sure he's one of those
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in Latham. I don't have a complete thought about him yet because I haven't watched enough, but I'm pretty interested from what I see. I wanted to kind of dip back into the Jets roster, because there was one question, Chris, and I wanted to ask you specifically. What was your take on the Jets safety situation? Specifically, we're talking about strong safety, not free safety. I liked what I saw in Adams. Even if I think there were mistakes made, I think those things are growing pains, in my opinion. But on the other, at the other safety position, I don't understand, and I understand the big hits, and everybody's and every time people keep telling me, oh, he has this amount of interceptions. Am I wrong here? I'm not buying this. I think the Jets could upgrade safety wise, especially in the strong safety position. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they need to. I think there were too many big plays across that deep middle there. I mean, Jordan Whitehead, he had the interceptions, right? I think three of them came in week one. So that's kind
something
of
like
a,
that.
Yeah, something like that. It difficult there. But the big hits, the tackling, a lot of missed tackles from him. A lot of missed assignments, it felt like, as well. Tony Adams is an interesting player, because I think the Jets like him a lot, and we got him. I think he was a undrafted free agent they got him for. And he had the monster play against the Philadelphia Eagles on the interception. But I think if there's any position on the defensive side of the football that the Jets should say, hey, we need to upgrade, and we need to upgrade right now, and maybe we could find someone in the draft, or maybe we could find someone in free agency, it's the safety position. And especially with the zone coverage, coming up, tackling guys, not missing assignments deep down the middle of the field, et cetera. I think if there's any position that the Jets should say, hey, if we're gonna spend some kind of premium pick in the draft on a position, it would be the safety. Now, I don't know who that player potentially is or who it's going to be. But if they're going to upgrade, I think, safety, they need to upgrade. And again, nothing against Tony Adams. He's going to be on the roster next year. He's going to get his chance to play, but I don't think anyone on that back end safety position wise is safe.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. And then the thing that got me mad, which is a pet peeve of mine, is when players start responding to fans' takes on their play.
It's the worst.
Whitehead is on Twitter arguing with people about how good he is. You don't have to tell us, bro. You have to convince the coaches. You have to convince the people that pay you, and they watch film way closer than we do. So if we're having an issue with you, I think you got a problem.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't need my safety on Twitter arguing whether he gave up 8 touchdowns or 7. He's like, oh, they charged me with this one, and whatever the case was. I mean, he was responsible for quite a few. We don't really need him on Twitter explaining that, he didn't give up a whole lot. He just gave up quite a few. Jordan Whitehead, he had obviously his moments, and I think throughout the course of the year, everyone is. That's what's hard about roster evaluation, especially this point of the year, is you look back and you say, oh, well, Tony Adams had that, you know, that interception against the Eagles, or, oh, that, that three interception game that, that Jordan Whitehead had. And, you know, you start trying to justify, hey, if we can pull him out, if we could pull that out of him a little bit more, and you're like, all right, well, we have a 17 or 16 game sample, whatever the case is. If it's not happening, at least some kind of majority of the time, you know, you really have to figure out, hey, don't get caught up in what happened only a few times for the bigger picture and your whole roster evaluation. Ashton Davis, I think, deserves to be back on the roster. That's another guy back there. He got his hands on the football quite a bit, which is interesting. And I don't think he, you know, took as many snaps as maybe the other guys back there. But when the time came, he definitely can't lateral footballs anymore. Like he tried to get it. If you pick it off, don't start laterally.
Don't lateral
a defensive back. That's a no-go. But no. Other than that, yeah, I think Tony Adams, Ashton Davis, they're pieces to a puzzle, right? But yes. Ultimately for the safety spot, they need to look to upgrade. You just look around the league. Let's just say a guy like Kyle Hamilton. I know those guys aren't growing on trees or anything.
No, sir.
But you have a guy like that who's, you know, he could play the deep end in coverage. He can come up. He could play a linebacker spot for you. He can cover who you need him to. Just a versatile guy like that would be really cool to have in this defense, because I think they have a whole bunch of guys everywhere. But if there's one position they may be missing that at, I think it's that.
And you know what?
Chris. Last question about the roster. Yeah. Will Anderson, the deal with the not giving the kid in many snaps this season bothered me. What's your take?
Oh, Will McDonald.
I wish Will McDonald.
I wish we had Will Anderson. that would be awesome. Yeah. Yes. Will McDonald. So, they rotate a lot, and I think what probably held him back a bit is him holding up in the run game. And you think about it, on third down, you got to have Bryce out there. You're going to have probably Jermaine out there as well. Probably what kept him from getting on the field early on is his ability to be physical in the run game. I do think he probably needs to put on some weight, and that'll come. But I think you're looking at him as the 2024 piece, because what happens with Bryce Huff, I don't know. That's probably a conversation we can have for another day. We're probably all on the same page on that one. But if their goal is, or their plan is, hey, we can let Bryce Huff go because we have this guy brewing in Will McDonald, I think that's probably the plan. But it sucks when your first round pick doesn't see the field very often. But I don't think it's a situation where you look at it and you say, well, he's not on the field because we made a mistake. He's not very good. I don't think that's what it is. I think their defensive line was one of the deepest units in all of the NFL. They rotate guys a lot, but Bryce Huff was going to see the field over him. Jermaine Johnson was going to see the field over him. He got his reps when he got them. He's going to need to bulk up to be more physical in the run game. And so it's a developmental mindset. And I know that's not what people want to hear with your first round pick, but that's ultimately where I think it stands. People don't have any patience anymore.
very true.
That whole developmental piece. And I think Quincy Williams is like a pretty awesome example of a team I think it was the Jacksonville Jaguars. They didn't have patience with him. If you could give the Jets coaching staff and Joe Douglas credit, maybe more credit than anything on one thing, it was at some point in Quincy Williams' Jets career, I think he was almost like a chicken without a head. He was a guy that was running as fast as he could, and he was physical, but sometimes just didn't know where he was headed to. And they really got him to really hone down on understanding where he needed to be and when, and then an all-pro, first team all-pro type of year is pretty awesome. And so the development, people just don't have much patience anymore. Social media, you make one bad play, you're a bad pick, you're a bad signing. It is what it is. But my thoughts on Will McDonald altogether is developmental pick. I don't think the reason he didn't play is because he's not any good and they think they made some kind of mistake. He's gonna make plays next year.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's going to be a good player. I think the question with Will McDonald is more, should they have drafted him rather, you know, at that spot? Because
yeah,
they're basically in the same situation they are in this year, right? Like, we need a tackle, we need a wide receiver. Last year, basically the same thing, tackle, wide receiver. And they went, like we said earlier, they went their best player available, yeah, which normally is the right thing to do. But when you got glaring needs like this team does, sometimes you got to say, okay, you know, maybe we got to dig a little deeper, and not that much deeper, right? They could have went one of the wide receivers that were taken, what, 3-4 spots later. We could have one of those guys, Zay Flowers, Addison,
Jordan Addison,
the kid from the Seahawks, you know. So
JSN, yeah, all had really good rookie years.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the one thing with this year, and I'll throw it back to you, with this year in free agency, before we even get to the draft, safety, wide receiver, pretty good options that we could kind of grab. Tackle is where there's, right, there's like almost nothing there at tackle. Yeah. Do you see any, like, are there any players out there that people aren't talking about as a free agent or a trade that nobody's talking about that maybe the Jets are going to kind of grab at tackle?
At tackle, that's a good question. I don't know. Okay. In terms of tackle, I think it's set up pretty nicely for them to where the wide receiver, the safety, those type of positions. Listen, they're gonna need to add to it no matter what, and they may need to just be signing tackles because they're gonna need depth guys at least. And so, in terms of high end names, I don't know who's going to be available for them to sign. But it is set up for them to say, hey, okay, in free agency, we go after the depth, right? And we have some depth with Carter Warren was serviceable in his rookie year. I mean, he was not supposed to be playing as a fourth round rookie. You know, Mike Mitchell, those guys maybe are, you know, fighting for some roster spots and chances to be backups and such. You add an extra layer to that because obviously you have the bigger roster size until you have to cut it down in August. Get as much competition in there and really try to hone in your wide receivers. If we're looking at a wide receiver free agent wise, I would love to bring in a guy like Calvin Ridley. I think that would be a really good signing. Obviously a polished route runner. That's the best thing about Calvin Ridley. And got his feet back kind of underneath him a little bit after the suspension. So wide receiver, hey, you grab a wide receiver like Calvin Ridley, all of a sudden you got Calvin Ridley, Garrett Wilson, and then you're going to find somebody, you know, also in the draft and, you know, maybe some other pieces in free agency. But then you could turn around and say, hey, we got our depth signings on the offensive line in free agency. Here's our chance because the tackle position and the offensive line position is, or the tackle position more specifically, is so strong in that top half of the first round, which you're sitting in. And so you can get one of your bookend starters. Again, you're going to need to have two tackles. So I don't know who's going to be available in terms of who they can take. And again, maybe it is a trade. Who's the Bakhtiari? I don't know. Is Bakhtiari a free agent now this year?
That's a ramble I've been hearing, but I'm not certain that's a thing, but we'll see.
And he hasn't played in like 2 years, right?
So right. And again, I know it's the Rodgers effect and all that kind of stuff, and it's a big name, but again, we're looking at a lot of injuries that the Jets have had,
right?
And you know, that was kind of the problem last year. I mean, we Dwayne Brown, we brought him back. Hasn't been healthy, was never healthy. Mekhi Becton, we relied upon him. 2 years, you know, not really healthy, and all of a sudden we're throwing him out there to play a full year, and he played, wasn't very, very good. But, you know, so yeah, you're going to need, but we do have to be conscious, I think, a little bit more of less high-end names, more durability. That's why I kind of, I, I, I kind of pointed out the you know, Amarius Mims, the tackle from Georgia, talented player. But do we want to draft a guy at 10, or if we trade back at the, you know, in the high teens or whatever, and pick a guy that played 7 games for Georgia in 2023 at the tackle spot, and another big, big body that you don't know how he could potentially hold up. And so, yeah, Chris, you bring up a good point with Bakhtiari in terms of he might be a guy available that they may sign, but do they want to rely on someone like that to play all, you know, for a full year?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a good research question, though. It's a good research question for who's available at the tackle spot, because they're going to need that.
Yeah, I want to have a little deeper conversation about the draft. I think after the draft, if you don't mind, come back, and we're really going to dig a little deeper into our options over at that time. Of course, as a podcast, man, we are Jets centric, but we are football centric. And we did dabble a little bit into what happened in this wild card portion of the postseason. But I think we need to have the Lions conversation, because if as Jets fans, talk about change of culture, right? People made fun of the head coach when he said he was biting kneecaps and, you know, all this and all this. Hey, listen, what a hell of a job this man has done over there. And you talk about Aaron Glenn and how bad that defense was last year. And little by little throughout this season, that defense has become better and better, and ultimately playing their best football, in my opinion, this weekend. What are your take on that game with the Rams and the Lions, and what's your thoughts on the Lions ultimately?
Yeah, the Lions, Brad Holmes, and he done a great job with really bringing in guys that Dan Campbell fits with, right? They had a very, very clear vision of who they wanted on this roster. You know, that term grit that they always use in Detroit. You know, you bring in a bruiser like David Montgomery to run behind that offensive line, and you add the finesse of a Jahmyr Gibbs. You know, Amon-Ra St. Brown is one of the more talented wide receivers in the NFL, but he's like a hard nose type of guy. He's a good route runner, but he's hard to bring down.
He's Detroit.
He's physical. He's Detroit. You know, and you couple him with you take David Montgomery, the bruiser, and you couple him with a guy like Jahmyr Gibbs. This way you're not losing out on the finesse part of the game as well, because you need guys that are able to miss. But then you take a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown, he's the physical kind, and you match him up with a guy like Jameson Williams, who could just burn you down the field. I know his numbers aren't there, but you know, he's kind of a big part in what they do as well. And you know, you draft a guy like Sam Laporta, you know, he's another Detroit guy. He's just a hard-nosed guy. He's wearing the big brace last night, and it didn't slow him down, didn't stop him. He's playing no matter what. The defensive side of the football, you said it, Aiden Hutchinson was the guy in the draft that, super talented, but I think you also labeled him as, you coupled him with super talented, extremely high motor, just never going to stop until that whistle's done. He fits the Detroit mold, coming over from Michigan. And the back end, Brian Branch, playing the safety spot, he plays a huge role for them. I mean, he plays man coverage. He makes big plays. He gets his hand on the football. He's all over the place. He did that at Alabama. Nick Saban was so involved in, if there was probably any position group at Alabama that Nick Saban was involved in, it was the secondary. And Brian Branch, you know, if he's coming from Alabama and he's tasked with making all those calls, getting guys aligned for a Nick Saban team, he's going to come in and be a difference maker. So they were able to find guys that fit their mold. It also helps a ton when you got Ben Johnson as an offensive coordinator. Again, what we talk about, super creative, aggressive, and Dan Campbell just puts it all on the line. You have however many fans fit in that stadium in Detroit. It's fourth and goal. It's, you know, a close game at this point. It's their first home playoff game in 30 years. Don't kick the field goal. Don't kick the field goal. Go for the touchdown, right? And if you don't get it, right, everyone in that stadium is going to say, they're going to turn around. They're going to say, all right, we're going to cheer on the defense. We're not going to sigh. We're not going to say, oh, you should have kicked the field goal. You should have taken the points. What they do matches that city. It's really fun to watch because I think the three of us and everyone that watches Jet games on Sunday, we can't wait for that moment that we're sitting there watching that game. And we just hope that, you know, the players and the coaching staff coach in that kind of similar way. And hey, 4th and 5 at midfield. Hey, we're going to go for it. Hey, it's 2nd and 7. We can run this ball and run the clock out and just punt it away and just hope, or we can get Amon-Ra St. Brown, on a little bit of a curl route for a first down. We're taking a couple knees and the game's over. I just think everything that they've done is awesome. It's aggressive. Everyone's bought in and they drafted really well. And Jared Goff found a home there. It's really cool to see their progression.
And you know what? And to be honest, the difference in that game was basically the Lions going for it and also scoring touchdowns when they were in the red zone and the Rams not, right? The Rams had to settle for, I think, 3 field goals. And that basically was the difference in the game.
That's the difference in the game. That's it. And hats off to Matt Stafford, though. A little shout out to Matt Stafford. He's wildly underappreciated, I think, when we talk about, you know, quarterbacks of our generation type of deal. He's a Hall of Famer. We always see these sidearm throws and, oh, look at what Mahomes does. And, you know, look at what Caleb Williams is doing at USC. And he looks like Mahomes, and Stafford's over there waving his hand like, hey, I was the first
I've
one.
Been,
I,
yeah, I've been doing this.
I've been doing this since 2006, 2007, you know. So it's, fun to watch him too.
And I think that was why Stafford wanted to leave Detroit, because he wanted to be, you know, like he was just kind of, I don't want to say wasting away in Detroit, but he was putting up all these numbers in Detroit and people are like, yeah, whatever, it's Detroit. So he goes to the Rams, he wins the Super Bowl. Now people are like, oh, this guy's actually pretty good. You know, like this guy's going to the Hall of Fame, you know, and also ran to this guy's going to the Hall of Fame.
It's crazy that you said that. But we can't end this football conversation without talking about the Texans, man. Mm. What a story, man. Rookie head coach, rookie quarterback, does not look like a rookie head coach, does not look like a rookie quarterback. Nope. And then they brought everybody else with them, man. The discipline. When we talk about procedural issues on offense and defense with the Jets, watching this young team come in and out of the huddle consistently, play for play. Everybody knows what they're supposed to do. Everybody is where they're supposed to be. Every time, I think on the other end of the spectrum, as in not getting penalized as much as the Jets did. That's crazy.
Yeah,
that is crazy that you got that many young people on the team and they're playing so cohesively and just so aware at all times, and guys are just making plays consistently. And to end the conversation, please talk about the Texans, but we got to talk about that QB, man. And explain to me what the hell happened. Where the hell did this kid come from? I mean, we saw him play in college. We knew there was something to him now. Indianapolis is like probably cursing the right now, for real. Oh, man.
Yeah, you nailed it. D'Amico Ryans did a phenomenal job. First-time head coach. They have a first-time play caller, and they have a rookie quarterback. We tried this 2 years ago. It didn't work. But, again, another team, and having Laremy Tunsil there at left tackle, the protection is in place. But, again, C.J. Stroud just looks so dang comfortable back there. And with him, I think he gets a lot of his confidence or he gets a lot of confidence from the fact that from day one, he was not afraid to just let it go. He just was not afraid to just throw the ball downfield. How many times have we seen him throw it downfield to Tank Dell? Now Nico Collins is just kind of flourishing with CJ Stroud, but he's not afraid to give his guys a chance. And I think that success early on just kind of built momentum for him. And it was like, hey, listen, I've done it. I could do it. And it just keeps going on. Now we don't see that a whole lot from rookies. This is, I think, probably really unprecedented in terms of rookie quarterbacks. I really can't think off the top of my head of anyone that's had a season like that as a rookie. I don't know if you guys can. Yeah.
Chris, can you think of anybody?
Obviously, no. Mahomes did it in like his first year starting, but it wasn't his rookie year. It wasn't his rookie year. Lamar Jackson wasn't. He wound up playing as a rookie, but it wasn't as dynamic. It wasn't an entirety of a year.
Right. He wasn't a full-time starter, right? Like he came on later or something, or.
Yeah. Flacco was playing there, and they ran like a very simplified kind of college running type of offense for him. Yes. He didn't really throw the ball a whole lot at that juncture. For CJ Stroud, we saw glimpses at Ohio State. I don't like the revisionist history of like, oh my God, Carolina made such a huge mistake, because no one was really saying at that point in time, like, why aren't the Carolina Panthers taking CJ Stroud?
That's true. You're right.
I remember back to when the Texans last year, they had Davis Mills at quarterback and they won that game at the end of the year. They went for two to win the game. They won it. And it took them out of the first overall pick. People were clowning the Texans because they were like, you just gave up the chance to take Bryce Young at first overall. Mm. And now everyone's like, oh man, people in Carolina have to be kicking themselves for not taking CJ Stroud. And it's like, no one saw this coming. This is super just a star is born overnight. Clearly he was really talented at Ohio State, but nobody saw this coming at any point in time at this early in his career. It's going to be fun to see what he does next year. And this year is not over for him. It's just going to be, has he handle expectations moving forward, because they're going to be sky high. He's going to be ranked in top 10 quarterbacks all off season. But they're going to attract talent. I think in Houston, I don't know what their cap situation looks like or what their draft picks kind of look like and what they have going on there. But, between CJ Stroud on offense and Will Anderson on defense, their top five picks from last year, they have two building blocks, probably unlike any other franchise right now in the NFL, that young in terms of rookies. So really fun, but I think now they're going to play Baltimore next week. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Right? Baltimore,
exactly. Yeah. Baltimore, Houston. So,
all right, James, before we go, let me ask you this. Do you think there's a team out there or teams that's going to stop what looks like, or probably a Baltimore San Fran Super Bowl? Do you see a team like what do you think about that?
What's
not going to happen? I think it's almost, it's going to happen, right? San Fran, Ravens.
It feels that way. Listen, the Buffalo Bills, I mean, I know they're rival territory and stuff, but they are playing extremely well right now. And so is it something where you could see the Bills, now they have to play Kansas City in Buffalo next week. Can another win against Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid just have them on one of those trajectories where they feel like they're a team of destiny, they're the hot team, and Baltimore right now, we saw what they did all season long. What happens when they have a week off? Are they rusty against Houston and something terrible happens and they're trying to all of a sudden I think they'll win that game. But maybe it's not as pretty as it looked all year. And so all of a sudden they're trying to find their footing and they have to now play a Buffalo team that has all the confidence in the world coming off back-to-back wins in the wild card and then the divisional round. So I don't want to count Buffalo out in that regard. In the NFC, I can't see it. I think the San Francisco 49ers are just going to they're gonna walk right over the Green Bay Packers, have the momentum, and then in the NFC Championship game maybe they face the Lions, but I think San Francisco, this is their time to get to a Super Bowl and have a really, really good chance to win the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think
Yeah. Do you guys think? I'm with you. I think Baltimore, San Francisco is a really safe bet for the Super Bowl. But do you guys think someone?
No.
Yeah, I don't.
See no, that. I don't agree with the Bills' take, because to me, again, the same issues keep raising his head. I understand that Brady has kind of changed their outlook a little bit, but
yeah,
it still comes back to the same thing. They believe that Josh Allen is their everything. And mm-hmm. it's just not a way an NFL offense should be run. I think the games where they look their best is when their run game was primary. And guess what? As a defense, you start keying on that run game, and then Josh Allen could cause you a myriad of issues, you know.
Yeah.
So to me, the fact that they're not leaning more on being a little bit more physical as a football team on offense is kind of crazy to me, especially going away a little bit from the quarterback, man, and having him run all over the place when we know. I'm sorry, he has a propensity to turn the ball over. What are you going to do? He's a superstar. Yeah, you could say that. But if he's turning the ball over a million times, take the ball out of his hands a little bit. So I'm not really fond of the Bills too much, because the Ravens is a problem, man. I mean, where's the weakness? Tell me where is the weakness? I can't find it.
It's probably one team that's in the playoffs or in the league that doesn't have a flaw on that team, right?
No, yeah, no. I saw a stat, because I don't want to count the last game against the Steelers, because I don't think they played anybody, the Ravens, in terms of their starters and stuff. So I'll exclude that out. But at some point, I want to say maybe it was one of the last games of the year where they played the Dolphins or whatever the case was. They had said that the Ravens had led. They had a lead for 90% of the season.
Jeez.
So like in 90%, and they only they never trailed at the 2 minute warning of the fourth quarter.
Oh my god!
And so their only losses that they had outside of that last Steelers game was just games where a team went down the field and they won it at the end of the game or whatever the case was. So they're a team that just, you're right. I don't know where you point out the weakness, and Josh Allen could get himself in a whole lot of trouble at that point, because Josh Allen's flaw is he plays every play like it's his last play. And that's a problem when you're in the playoffs and you're playing a team that, like the Ravens or the Chiefs. Mason Rudolph's not taking advantage of mistakes that you might make, like Mahomes is or Lamar Jackson is. That's just the fact of the matter. So yeah, I agree with that. They're way better if they rely on their run game and they get that going, and Josh Allen can just reel it back here and there, and not make those bonehead mistakes he usually makes.
All right, James, yes, I got a question for you quick.
Yeah.
Where do you think, since you're a college guy, where do you think Harbaugh ends up? Michigan, or is he playing, or is he coaching in the NFL?
I think he's gonna go to the NFL. I think he's going to go to the NFL. I don't know what's going to happen with the whole like Michigan cheating type thing. I didn't really look a whole much into it. I don't know if it's going to wind up like, I could see a Pete Carroll type of situation where Pete Carroll was like, hey, I won a bunch of these national championships at USC. We're about to get in a little bit of trouble, so I'm going to head over to Seattle, and then USC just has to deal with whatever sanctions get put on. I could see a situation with Harbaugh where he's like, hey, listen, I came to my alma mater, made a whole bunch of money. I'm won a national championship now. I'm going to head back to the NFL. I think the college game has that extra element of recruiting that really probably takes a toll on the entire coaching staff and makes it more of a 24/7, 365 type of job. And so I could see him going. I could see him. Probably his best bet would be the Chargers, because I think they got a lot of pieces already in place. They just needed someone to really, really help them put it all together. You already have Justin Herbert. You don't have to worry about the quarterback spot. And then you got some nice pieces on the defensive end, defensive side of the ball. The interesting piece was, I don't know if you guys saw, I saw some kind of report today that if Harbaugh interviews with the Raiders, they would entertain doing what they need to do to draft J.J. McCarthy so that J.J. McCarthy and Harbaugh are in Vegas. So he basically has his quarterback. I don't know how true it is or whatever the case is or what they would need to do to make that happen, but that would potentially be one of the things that the Vegas would do to try to, you know, reel him into the Raiders job. But I think he winds up going to the NFL. I do.
Yeah. That does sound like a Raiders move. The big splashy type. Yep.
Yeah, it does. And listen, J.J. McCarthy, I don't know.
Yeah, I understand.
I don't know if I still have sour grapes just from the Rose Bowl and stuff, but I think one of the things I'm kind of learning from scouting or you know, evaluating, you know, is how much, you know, how much adversity has, you know, a quarterback faced, you know, in college. Is he ready for that, you know, that moment? And J.J. McCarthy did great and for what Michigan asked him to do. But they never had the only time they had a second half deficit was against Alabama in the Rose Bowl. So that's 14 games and you know, he threw the ball 8 times against Penn State or 11 times against Penn State. Just a quick thought. That's maybe just sour grapes from the Rose Bowl, but
we don't blame you.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I think he does go to the NFL. I think that's where he winds up. I don't think you're taking these with the way that, sorry, I don't mean to rant on this here, but with the way the NCAA is right now with the transfer portal, with NIL, I don't think you risk taking NFL interviews knowing that just the report that you might be leaving may trigger three to four guys entering the transfer portal or recruits saying, hey, I'm reopening my commitment, because there are programs around the country right now looking at this and saying, what recruits DMs am I going to slide in from Michigan and say, hey, heard Harbaugh's going to interview with the Chargers. You know, what do you think? Because once an NCAA coaching job gets opened up, it's open season on all those players. And I don't think Harbaugh risks that, if he's not serious about going to the NFL.
Hey, yeah. Great point, man. Great point. Man, thank you so much for coming through as usual. Our conversations are always great, man. I mean, we don't have a lot of people that we normally call in. And of course we are, you're basically family right now.
Yeah. Oh, no, I appreciate that.
Like every year we can't wait. We look forward to having these conversations. After the draft, we want to reach out and have another conversation about the outlook on the players and their performance and the, and athletics to see how high they jump, how far they jump and all that, and kind of marry, see, you know, what it looks like from then. But for now, thank you so much for coming through, James, man.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. Love coming on and talking. I can't believe it's been like an hour and change. I feel like, you know, talking ball is I love it. So thanks for giving me the platform to come on and talk. And yeah, would love to come either right before the draft. We could talk some later round picks that we could potentially scoop up to help this roster. And yeah, of course, after the draft, and looking forward to another off season and then talking with you guys again. So thanks for having me on.
Thanks again, James. And let everybody know where they can find you.
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter, BSB_breakdowns. That's where I'm at. And been pretty light on the articles for Jets X Factor. Going to actually be a dad here in a couple weeks for the first time.
Oh, congratulations, man.
So thanks.
Welcome to the club.
Thanks. So so looking forward to that. So that's been pretty new for the last, you know, obviously 7.5, 8 months here. So, but Jets X Factor and Twitter, you can find me on, and looking forward to doing more this off season.
All right. Awesome, man. Thanks again. And that's our show, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Take it easy, guys.